On January 23rd, you're climbing the tallest building in Taiwan. Why?
Why? Because it's awesome. Because I get to, basically. Because, yeah, it's because it'll be so fun. I mean, yeah, basically, it's really hard to get permission to climb a building. And if you get permission, you kind of have to say yes. It's like so many other sorts of life experiences where you're kind of like, well, it's a hard thing to do, but you get permission, you kind of just have to go do it.
And you've been wanting to climb this building for quite some time, right?
Yeah, I actually scouted it for a different TV thing that fell apart in 2013, I think. So for the last, 12 years, I've known that it was possible. I knew that the building is honestly uniquely suited for climbing. It's kind of perfect. It's amazing. And it's a really beautiful building. I mean, I don't think that many people know what it looks like, but it's
I looked at it before.
Yeah, it's singular. It's striking. I mean, you saw how it sticks out of the cityscape. I mean, it's incredible. So it's just so cool. But so 12 years ago or so, I scouted it and realized that I could do it. And was like, this is amazing, but never got the opportunity. And so now I get the opportunity.
I love that. And is this building that fascinating to you because of the architecture, because of the cityscape? Is that how you choose what you feel inspired to climb?
I mean, a little bit. I think in general with rock formations, there are always a bunch of the different things that go into choosing a cool objective. But part of it is, the aesthetic beauty of it. Like, is it striking? Does it catch the eye? Is it beautiful? Part of it is in rock climbing is sort of like the mythology of it, like the climbing history. Like, is it important to climbers? And so I think with buildings, it's kind of the same way. Like, is it striking? Is it beautiful? Is it possible? Which in this case, it's kind of in the perfect sweet spot where it's possible and it's challenging, but it's not insanely challenging. Because if you're going to do something for a TV program, it has to be, you just have to be able to do it on command. So you don't want it to be, cutting like the hardest thing ever done. You want it to be kind of in a sweet spot where you're like, this is challenging and it's going to, keep me focused, but it's not insanely difficult.
You started climbing really young, right?
Well, 10-ish. Which actually nowadays, elite climbers all start even younger.
Really?
But yeah, I was like...
Ahora continuamos con el podcast. Pero antes, ¿sabías que solo uno de cada cinco oyentes llega al final de un episodio? Por eso, resumimos tus podcasts favoritos. Entra en nuestra web para saber más.
Lucky enough to start as a kid.
And was it always the plan for it to be a professional pursuit?
No. No, my parents are both professors and, they were supportive and like, go do the thing that you like to do. But I mean, especially when I was young, climbing was way more fringe, way more niche. And so nobody was a professional climber, but thankfully as I grew up, that kind of climbing has also grown up quite a bit. Climbing's in the Olympics now. It's just way bigger of a sport. So it's a little less unusual and there's just more money in it now. So you can actually make a living and,
Was there a moment that you felt that you're like, oh, I'm actually good at this. Like, this is real. Like, when did that happen for the first time?
No, not really. For years I thought that I would wind up being a mountain guide or something. I figured I'd get some kind of job within the climbing world. And I was living in a van by myself. So it's pretty low overhead. You're kind of just living. And then eventually you're kind of like, oh, I'm making a living doing this thing I love to do. And then eventually you're making a little more. And then I was like, oh. I mean, it took years until I really thought of myself as a professional climber. At first it was just kind of like, oh, I'm basically a homeless person living in a van who happens to get climbing shoes for free. And you're like, oh, that's cool, but that's different than feeling like you're actually going to make a living as a rock climber.
And so you were doing this even when there was no money. This was what you were chasing. Working another job and doing this on the side.
I did work, I worked in my climbing gym when I was a kid and, I worked a little bit on the side, but no, basically I've just been trying to climb my whole life.
Well, what was the first climb that you did that was challenging and risky or some sort of like real?
I mean, I think as I started to dabble outdoors, because I grew up in suburban California in Sacramento, and so I would just ride my bicycle to the climbing gym. And so for the first, 8 years of my climbing life is just going climbing in the gym. So, I mean, it's super fun and you can learn all the skills that way, but it's not particularly extreme or anything. It's not like, it's not what people think of as adventure. And then once I learned how to drive and then started like borrowing the family car and started going outside more, then I started having some of the adventures that I think characterize, what people think of as extreme rock climbing and all that.
Yeah. What's the experience for you? Like, is it the thrill? Is it the fascination? What part of it gives you life and brings you alive? Like, what part of it gives you joy?
I mean, I think at the core is just the movement of climbing. Like, I literally just came here from the climbing gym because I had a little time in between.
I could see on your hands.
I didn't wash my hands. But But yeah, it's like there's a climbing gym relatively nearby, and I was like, oh, perfect. So just a quick sesh and basically just rapid fired problems around the gym, bouldering gym. So just short and, you know, safe. And I just did an hour as fast as I could, and now I'm tired. And I'm like, what a nice day. So it's really just the movement of climbing, I think, is the at the core, that's the joy of it. But then beyond that, there's the challenge, you know, like overcoming fear, you know, as a professional climber, I mean, the travel involved in it, like seeing the world, being outdoors in nature, having, you know, beautiful experiences, all your friends. I mean, there are all these other things that are amazing about climbing. But I think the thing that always brings me back to is I just like climbing. You know, it's like running or swimming or other sort of like elemental movement patterns. It just feels good to do the thing.
Yeah. Tell me about the actual skill of climbing for someone who isn't a climber.
You haven't climbed at all?
I don't think I've climbed at all. I'm trying to think about it in my life. I don't think I've ever climbed. And so I would love to understand, like, talk to me about the actual skill of climbing as if you were training me.
Even as a kid, you never climbed on things?
Oh, of course. I love climbing on things. I wanted to do parkour. My parents would never let me. Parkour was like my fascination. I saw kids doing parkour. I was like, that's so cool. I love climbing trees. I love climbing walls.
Yeah, so I think
I've climbed a lot of gates. I've climbed like that, but I mean, like, I've never.
Well, I think that's the same thing, basically. Yeah. And that's actually, I think, one of the interesting things. You know, with this building thing coming up, people are like, why would you climb a building? And I'm kind of like, well, as a kid, I climbed all the buildings around my 100%. Home. I climbed all the trees. I fell out of trees quite a lot.
Me too.
And, you know, I'm kind of like.
Understanding how fear influences climbing techniques lays the groundwork for exploring how this mindset translates to emotional challenges. As our adventurer dives into the complexities of managing fear in both climbing and public speaking, insights into overcoming anxiety in unfamiliar situations will be revealed. How can fear shape our relationships?
Does that translate from the physical sensation to when you're having emotional, relational challenges as well?
Probably less so than my wife wishes, you know?
Yeah. You know what I mean, right?
I think it does a little bit probably because, you know, to some extent, managing fear is managing fear.
Yes.
But it is a little bit of what you practice. Like, I think I'm really good at dealing with like physical fear, like physical risk and things where I'm like, I feel like I'm in danger. Less so, I mean, public speaking, I was horrified of for a long time. But again, with tons of practice, it's gotten much more comfortable. It's fine. And then like relationship-able stuff, I'm sort of like, oh, that's, I mean, my wife would say there's still a long ways to go.
Yeah, talk to me about the difference between like the fear of what you do, which most of us would see as that is scary, and then public speaking, which is known as one of the scariest things on planet Earth. Like, talk to me about the difference.
No, I think it's really similar. I mean, I think most people are, I mean, I was definitely more afraid of public speaking than climbing, but obviously, you know, I love climbing. I spent my whole life doing it.
Yeah.
But public speaking is horrifying. Though that said, now that I've had a lot of practice with it, I would say that it's not that scary. Whereas climbing still always has some edge to it because fundamentally you could die.
Yeah.
You know, with public speaking, it like feels like you might die, but you're just, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like you can always go out and like make a fool of yourself and it doesn't really matter.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like the reason why we get scared of doing things that where there isn't a cost is because we almost make it out like there is a higher stake to it.
Yeah, but I think that with a little bit of practice, you realize that there just isn't that high of a stake.
There's no,
like, you know, when you haven't done it before, you're like, what if they laugh at you? And then you're like, what if they do? Like, who cares? You know, like, turns out it's totally fine, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, but with some of the physical fear stuff, you're kind of like, well, I mean, it does matter if you fall to your death or, you know. So those, you know, that will always have some edge to it.
Yeah. And so how do you process that in the moment when that's what you're thinking?
I mean, it depends. Sometimes, you know, first take some deep breaths, compose yourself, sort of like try to deal. I mean, the thing with climbing is that there's never any time pressure to it. So you can just stand there basically.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
You know, even if you're clinging to the rock, like maintaining a static position is typically not like that hard. So you can just hold on, take some deep breaths, take your time, get composed, and then try to decide whether or not, you know, it's like sometimes you get really scared for no particular reason. And then other times you're kind of like, oh, it turns out that I, you know, misjudged the rock quality and this is much more dangerous than I thought it was. And like, maybe I should bail. And so, I mean, I've bailed off all kinds of things where you climb partway up something and you're like, this is not for me. And you just climb back down.
That's interesting to hear. So you're okay with knowing your edge and knowing your limit. And
And the thing with free soloing is that you always have to stay well within your limits. You know, it's like, because like when you're climbing with a rope, you're always trying to push yourself like sort of beyond your limits so that you can learn and grow and everything. But if you're free soloing, you stay well within your comfort zone because obviously you just can't fall off.
And that's what this next climb is, right?
Yeah, this next climb is free soloing, but it should be, I mean, it's interesting. It should be well within my physical comfort zone. Like, you know, I should be able to physically climb it. But the sort of exciting thing for me is that I've just never climbed a building like that. about it before. Yeah. And so, so I think even though I'm very confident in my physical ability to do it, I'm still kind of like, well, I'm doing a new thing. And so that's always a little bit exciting.
Yes. Yeah. I love that as well. I feel like what I really appreciate with how we're talking about fear right now and through your reflection on it is that there's a sense of recognizing that anytime I do something new, I'll feel a sense of discomfort or fear. Mm. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because that means I'm growing, I'm trying something new.
Well, and that's the whole thing is like, are you experiencing fear? Or are you experiencing nervousness or excitement or, you know, because a lot of those things are the same sensation in your body, really. You're like, oh, I'm like a little nervous and, or I'm feeling like butterflies and I feel tingling and I'm on edge and I feel heightened. And you're like, am I afraid or am I excited?
Before diving into visualization techniques, it's crucial to understand the role of risk perception in climbing. The discussion highlights how climbers weigh potential dangers, which sets the stage for exploring visualization in navigating risks. How does this mental practice transform their climbing experiences? Let's find out as they delve deeper into these fascinating concepts.
All the different sequences better. And so they sent me just some visuals of the building, but then they also sent me some clips of me climbing different things. And I was like, oh, this is actually tremendously useful because I can see, you know, how I'm doing it and what I can do better. And just, you know, I was like, oh, this is great.
I love that you use visualization as a technique though.
Every climber does. It's a really big part of climbing.
And you're visualizing the process, the texture, the feeling,
everything,
every detail that you could possibly imagine or know from.
And sometimes you're imagining, you know, the experience, like the consequences of it, or like, what if you do fall? Like, I mean, like particularly with free soloing all cab, like with, I've spent so long kind of working on that. I mean, I thought about like, what if I fell from here or fell from there? Just because, and even though those are terrible things to visualize because it's you falling to your death in horrible ways, because, you know, in a lot of places falling off a mountain, it's not like a clean, it's not like I fell and then you hit the ground. It's like you bounce, you know, hundreds of feet or 1,000 feet and it's a disaster. And so, but it's important to think about that stuff ahead of time so that when you're up there, you don't suddenly for the first time, you know, it's not like, oh, if I fell here, it would be horrible. It's like, no, you've already thought about that. You visualized it, you processed it, and you've chosen to set that aside and execute the climb anyway.
Yeah, you've already sat with the discomfort of that feeling in a safe environment.
Exactly.
So now you can track that and bring that with you to this.
Yeah, moment. Now you don't have to think about it while you're up there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, ideally, you think through all that stuff ahead of time. And so far with the building, I haven't gotten too deep into all that yet, just because I'm still kind of a ways out and I'm sort of focused on the physical side. And it's just not quite as close to my personal edge, I think. I'm pretty sure. Like, I think it should be well within my comfort zone, I think.
Yeah.
So there's just not as much time devoted to like, what if I die? But you know, we'll see.
No, but I love the visual. What's interesting to me, because I'm thinking about all of us and I think the smallest things in the world would be easier. So for example, I've been public speaking for years and I've always asked for a picture of the stage so that I can visualize myself walking out, so that I don't trip over when I go out there, so that I think about all the, and I'm giving a very human example of something that I hope my listeners can take away going, okay, well, how do I use that? I'm like, yeah, I visualize myself giving presentations. I visualize myself doing difficult things for the first time. I visualize pretty much everything. I use it as a technique.
You're a trained visualizer though. So yeah, it's like an easy tool for you to pull out of the box.
For sure. But I would really encourage people to do it, because hearing you talk about it, I'm like, yeah, you're visualizing all the details. And what I love that you haven't once said, and I want to ask you about this, is you didn't just say, oh, I visualize myself getting to the top and celebrating. It's like, no, I visualized.
No, I don't care about that.
I thought you didn't. That's what it's about. Talk to me about that, because I think that's what today, when we talk about manifesting and visualizing, people have this visualize where you want to live.
Yeah, they visualize success.
Right?
And it's like, who cares about that? Because like, that'll just follow. Like, if that happens, great. If it doesn't, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't visualized that. Actually, I mean, it's not totally true, because the top of the building is this incredible little spire. It's like a small, it's basically the space between us. It's just a little dome. And so you just stand on this. Yeah, you stand on this tiny little pinnacle and it's incredible. And the view is insane. But, you know, I've already gone up there, like climbed up through the hatch just to like check it out and rappel off the side and things. And so, I mean, you know, I know it's amazing and I know that it's going to feel amazing to stand up there. So I haven't really like visualized that, because I'll just, you know, it's like when it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
But no, you visualize the stuff that's important. But actually, I mean, talking about this, I think in some ways, if you're talking to like the layperson audience, whatever, I think maybe it's worth not framing it as visualization, because, you know, over the years as a climber, I've always just kind of thought of it as daydreaming. You know, it's like, because also as a climber, you spend so much time hiking to and from cliffs, and I spend a lot of time by myself walking around, you know, in the mountains, and you just spend a lot of time daydreaming, basically, like thinking about climbing. And so, you know, occasionally like a project like this, I'll intentionally visualize where I'm like, okay, I'm getting ready for a thing. But basically anytime I go wandering in the mountains, I spend a tremendous amount of time just thinking about, you know, like your mind's always wandering on something. It might as well be wandering through climbs that you're excited about or things that you're thinking about or projects that you have, like things on the back burner that you didn't quite do that you want to go back to. So, you know, I mean, I think it's less daunting to think of it as like, oh, when you're out for a hike or like out for a walk with your dog, you just daydream about things that matter to you. Like that is visualization.
Yes. Yes. You know, yes.
Like you can make it more focused and you can do it more intentionally, but at the core, it's just imagining stuff.
Yes. Yes. I like that. And the truth is all of us are imagining, but most of us are imagining worst case scenario. Like, so we imagine the meeting and going, oh God, I'm going to get fired today. Or, you know, that's how we imagine.
Well, I wonder about that because, so I don't really have that so much.
I didn't think you did.
Yeah.
Before exploring his perception of self as a climber and entertainer, it's crucial to grasp Alex's reflections on personal growth and the impact of upbringing on anxiety. As he shares insights about his journey, listeners will discover how these experiences shape his philosophy on risk-taking and high performance.
And I'm like, nah, because, you know, I like to at least think of myself as like more of a high-performance athlete or whatever. And so I was like, oh, I'm a clothing model, but I send, you know, like I go hard. And now Tommy's like, oh, you're an entertainer. You're just like a TV personality. And I'm like, no, but send, you know, but the thing is, I don't mind being a TV person as long as you can actually do the thing you're trying to do, which is like climb hard, climb well, like do things that you're proud of.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, oh, Tommy, what a sweet man.
What else stuck out to you? What resonated with you?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just all...
No, it's a beautiful letter. It's very heartfelt for a man who knew you were going to run out of the room when you heard it.
I know. That's actually the funny thing. Yeah. But, yeah, nothing makes me squirm like public affection, especially with somebody close. That's so true. Yeah, no, I'm so impressed that he wrote this.
Love it. Well, you can keep it.
I should put this on my wall.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Frame it.
Like, what a nice...
to it as well.
Do you do that for guests? Or is that just like a thing you do occasionally?
Very rare. Yeah, we don't do it for everyone.
For the right type of guest.
Yeah, for the right guest who we feel is at a exciting moment, doing something new, doing something fresh. Like,
interesting.
When it feels right.
That's such a nice idea.
It's one of my favorite things to do because I feel like he said, like, I think in our day-to-day, we love people, but we don't say it like that. Mm. And you don't get many chances in life to reflect. And so I know I love reflecting on people and I've appreciated when people have done it for me. And it's one of my favorite things to do. I have this activity I do with when I'm doing workshops in companies sometimes where I'll take a group of leaders who, despite achieving great things, their biggest worry is that they're bad parents because they're so busy. Mm-hmm. And we always have their kids write a note to them and it's stuck under their chair.
Oh, that's like...
And it's really special because...
That seems like waterworks.
Yeah, and you also get to see what kids actually value versus what you think they value. So you're thinking like, oh, when I bought them that big gift or when I took them on that fancy vacation, it's like that kid just remembered you've read a story to them before they went to bed last night. Mm-hmm. Like that was the win. The win wasn't some, you know, grand gesture or some big... event in their life. It was this tiny moment where you actually present. So, but Alex, oh, go on. You're going to say something.
Oh, I'm just like, no, I'm so touched. It's funny. I mean, you know, I just read Think Like a Monk.
Yeah.
And one of my friends was just asking me like, oh, what are your takeaways? Like, what do you feel like you gained from it? And I was like, oh, there's a lot, you know, around like kindness, compassion, things like, you know, caring, service, like all these types of like, you know, I was like, you know, I think I have a lot of room for improvement, all of those things. Like, you know, because there's a lot in the book that I'm kind of like, yeah, no, this is fine. I got that. And then, you know, basically the whole second half of the book, I'm kind of like, that's not quite my sweet spot. And we're like, yeah, like there's something to be learned there. I'm just like, oh, yeah, just give something to think about.
Yeah.
Like, sweet Tommy. What a nice letter.
Sweet Tommy, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Alex, we end every episode of On Purpose with a final five. These questions have to be answered in one sentence maximum. Yeah. And so, Alex Honnold, these are your final five. The first question is, what is the best advice you've ever heard or received?
I'll just go for it. Just try. That's my advice.
It's worked for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's better. I mean, this is more than one sentence.
Please,
I mean, it's better to try something and fail than to not try it.
Yeah. Second question, do you even ever think about failure?
Well, if failure means death, then yeah, you think about it a lot. No, I don't know. Can I give more than one sentence?
Please. Freestyle.
I mean, yeah, because it's interesting because in climbing, failure, like basically as a climber, you fail all the time, nonstop. Like as a climber, you basically try projects and you fail on them over and over and over until the one time you succeed. And then as soon as you succeed, you move on to the next thing. And so Like yesterday, I failed on a project that I've been working on and off for like 5 or 6 years or something. I've been trying it forever. It's like my life project. And I almost did it yesterday. And hopefully I'll do it on Sunday, which is the next day I get to go back there. But basically, I will have spent years, literally years, failing on something. And then I'll do it once, which will represent about, you know, 13 minutes of high performance activity where I like try really hard. It might even be less than that. I'm not sure how long it takes to climb, but it's like in the minutes. And then after, you know, years of failure, I'll have 6 minutes of success and then I'll move on to the next thing. As a climber, it's like, you don't really define it as success and failure because you literally, you spend all your time failing.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Again, the exposure therapy is
You're just always failing, but that's the whole point. The whole point is to go out and try things that are hard for you. So by that definition, you're not failing. You're just going climbing. Yeah. Like climbing is failing.
Yeah. Question number three, what's something that you used to value that you don't value anymore?
Sort of say, I mean, maybe like the public acclaim to some extent. I think, you know, when you're alone in your van, you're kind of like, I just want to like be known basically so you can get laid. You're kind of like, oh, I just want to meet somebody, whatever. And then once you actually have some of that, you're like, ah, I don't really need all that. But
yeah. How long did you spend in that van?
I think I lived in the van 12 years.
12 years.
Yeah. I mean, I had some girlfriends on and off and various things. And but basically lived in the van from 20 to 30. Yeah, maybe a little more than that.
Were you happy then?
Oh yeah, it's great. But I just knew that I wouldn't want to do that my whole life.
What was it that made you happy then, but knew it wasn't what you wanted?
Oh, living in a van is amazing when all you're trying to do is climb at your limit. But barring even the obvious, like you'll lose motivation. You just don't care. You know, after 10 or 20 years of doing something nonstop, full tilt, you're like, you know, do I need to do another 20 years of that? And I knew that one day I'd want a family. And, you know, it's like my aspiration is to die at 80 with grandkids around me. And it's hard to do that if you live alone in a van.
Is that really the dream?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. That's the way some of my grandparents died. And I'm like, that's a great way to go.
Would that make you feel content? Like if you were looking back on your life at 80, what do you think would stand out to you?
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.